So I saw a documentary some time back on a temple that is built in the desert where they think the burning bush actually existed. They built a temple around this plant. It's about 2 stories tall. They've been nurturing it for, you know, a couple thousand years now. And they said, you know, when you look at this temple, you notice something's a little off. And it took me a little while to figure it out. And actually, I didn't figure out. The announcer had to say it. They said at some point back, several hundred years ago, the bush actually caught on fire. And it was consumed, and it almost died. And so now, when you look at this, there's fire extinguishers all around it. It's like built in this temple's built around it, and it comes up through the center courtyard. And so you can see it from the different balconies. And so now insurance requirements, because it's such a tourist dollar, so many people come to see just this bush, insurance requirements now mandate that they have fire extinguishers on every floor just in case the bush catches on fire again. So, ye of little faith, right? So years ago, a friend of mine up in Portland had a child. She has 2 now. But we're at that stage where we're trying to get the kids to say thank you. You know how we do this? We as parents, we prompt them. You know, someone gives them the gift, and what do you say? And they say, thank you. And what do you say? And what do we say? And so she was holding this 3-year-old in her arms, and someone gave him something, and she said, and what do we say? You know, can we say thank you? And he said, no, I don't think so. I'm too tired for that. He wasn't too tired to say that whole long sentence. But those 2 little words were just too overwhelming. And, you know, it's human nature. Even as children, you know, we make excuses. We don't want to do the things that we need to do. And so when we read this story of Moses and the burning bush and we hear him make all of these excuses and ask all of these rhetorical questions, it's a very human story. This could be anybody in any time, in any location, in any situation. This God calls us and we say, no, thank you. And so I'm going to tell you a little story, and I'm acutely aware of the fact that a good friend of mine from this very church I'm going to talk about is sitting in the pews, so she'll have to, you can ask her if what I say is true, if it's what she remembers. So years and years ago, I had just started attending a church next door to my new apartment. I was new in town. I was new to this area. I was new to the church. And I was very young compared to the rest of the congregation, very young. And I was in college, and I was kind of, you know, bursting with energy. And so, of course, they started asking me to volunteer for a lot of different things. And so one of the things that they asked me, somehow they had all got it in their heads that I should be chair of their outreach committee, that committee needed a shot in the arm. So the way this one, I think she was the moderator at the time, this was Lynn Grant, right? She wrote me a little note. She said, and she told me later, this is what she likes to do. When she wants to ask someone to take on a particular position or task, she would write them a note asking them to prayerfully consider it. And at the bottom of the note, she said, I'll call you in about 3 or 4 days to see what your answer is. Well, I didn't want to do this, right? I had no interest in being outreach coordinator. And so I've got this card sitting on my coffee table, and it says 3 days. 3 days, she's going to call. Right? And boy, those days just plotted, didn't they? She's going to call me, and I'm going to have to give her an answer. And how am I going to tell this woman, no, I don't want to? So Moses is in a very similar situation. What's interesting is that it starts with God saying, I have become aware. I'm aware of the suffering of the people in Egypt. I'm aware. Well, duh, everybody was aware of the suffering of the people in Egypt. The Egyptians were aware. The nation of Israel was aware. Moses was aware. Pharaoh was aware. God is aware. There's no way that anybody could not be aware of what was going on in Egypt. And so God calls Moses to do something about it. And he does. Remember how he stopped the Hebrew slave from being harmed and he murdered somebody? He's aware. He's aware. But he runs away from it. Remember that? He's aware, but then he runs. And so he's already been called. Everybody who was aware has been called to help with this situation, but nobody does. And so Moses finds himself in a burning bush kind of situation where God's really going to get his attention. Well, he knows he's aware, but now he's really going to get his attention, and he's going to ask him to do something about it. And so he has this moment where God makes the flames, and the spirit of the voice comes out of the bush, and he tells him, take off your shoes, you're on holy ground, and he really gets his attention. The only thing that he doesn't do is what most of the angels do when they bust out this kind of a scene on unsuspecting people. He doesn't start with, fear not. He doesn't start with, don't be afraid. No, he grabs his attention. And here's the thing. It can be extremely overwhelming when you are aware. It's no surprise to me, or I think to anyone, that Moses would say no to this. Because if you're aware of the suffering and feel responsible for that, it's impossible, almost impossible for you to do anything about it. I mean, if I say, oh, excuse me, would you be willing to end homelessness in the United States all by yourself right now? Is that possible? Can she do that? No. No, it's impossible. And so when we find ourselves in a situation where we feel responsible for something really important, but we have zero control over the situation, that's a crazy-making situation. Ask anybody who's had a mean boss that expects you to meet a deadline but won't give you the tools to do your job. You start to get a little nutty. And so what we tend to do is say, thank you, I'm going to eschew that responsibility. I'd rather not. And then we stay in our happy, comfortable place. And that's where Moses wants to stay, in his happy, comfortable place. So I'm in my living room one Saturday afternoon. And that card is, it's over there, right? No matter where I go in the house, it's always looking at me, right? Its eyes follow me. And I'm trying to think of all the things that I'm going to say to this woman when she calls to explain to her why I'm really not the right person. And so all of a sudden, I have a burning bush moment. I feel a holy nudge, a holy shove, if you will. More like a holy kick in the pants. Have you ever had one of those? A holy kick in the pants? Where God's like, go. And so the holy kick in the pants felt like this. All of a sudden, I felt this overwhelming urge. I had to go look out my kitchen window. It was very clear. Go look out your kitchen window. So I go look out my kitchen window. Now, I had just moved in. And down, we were at the top of a hill, and down this gentle slope of a hill, there's a huge apartment complex down there. And I'd never been down there. I didn't know anything about it. But you could see there was some sort of a to-do going on. There was sort of a to-do. There's some people, and there's some signage, and there's something going on. So I'm supposed to go down there. Okay, fine. But I want to go down there. It looks like a garage sale. And so my first excuse was, I don't need any more junk, right? I just moved. I know how much junk I've got. I had to pick it all up and carry it into a truck and then carry it. I don't need any more junk. You got to go. But I don't have any money. I don't need to be spending and wasting a bunch of money on a bunch of junk. You got to go. Well, I was really hoping to lounge around the house today. You got to go. Fine. So I go. And as I'm walking, getting ready to go out the door, the holy nudge says, make sure you take 2 index cards and a pen. I kid you not. I kid you not. Make sure you take 2 index cards and a pen. I didn't have 2 index cards. Good. My work here is done. I don't have 2 index cards. I'm going to sit down. Right? Got out of that one. So I turn around, and there on my ironing board, which I had left out, are 2 index cards and a pen. I kid you not. This really happened. This really happened. She can't vouch for it. She wasn't there. But it really happened. So I get my 2 index cards, and I get my pen, and I stick them in my back pocket, and I head down the hill. And as I'm coming up the hill, I'm seeing these little handmade, I had to go like all the way down and around a block or two and then come into this apartment complex from a different street. As I'm coming up, I'm seeing these construction paper signs that are handmade with markers and pens by children very clearly. And it says, you know, support our kids and, you know, come to garage rummage sale today. Well, okay, so I walk up and there's like one adult there and about 15 very small children, like the ages we saw today, ages 4 to 10. Maybe. About 15 of them. And nobody else is there. And they've got tables laid out with stuff for sale. And this is the saddest little garage sale I've ever seen in my life. We're talking t-shirts that have stains and holes on them. We're talking like forks that have the tines that were completely bent. Okay? We're talking shoes that are so stained, nobody ever wear them. And they're selling them for 25 cents a piece, 10 cents a piece. And so I start talking to this grown-up, and I'm like, you know, what's going on here? I saw your signs. And she goes, oh, we're having a school supplies drive. We're trying to raise money to buy school supplies for the 100-plus kids that live in this complex. And so the people that live there, it turns out this was the second largest low-income housing community in Oregon. And the people that live there had taken all of their belongings that they didn't need and were trying to sell them to raise money for their kids. Now, this is an impossible situation. You can't sell T-shirts for 15 cents a piece with holes in them and expect to outfit. Because this is the point where the schools had just started sending home the lists, you know? Like when you guys were in school, you just showed up with pencils and paper and, you know, you would make it work. Now you get a list of 15 items you have to have before the first day. Well, they had started sending those home. And I look at this situation and I just think this is impossible. I remember feeling an immediate, deep sadness and almost a little bit of panic because this was an impossible situation and I didn't want to be around it. So Moses starts giving these excuses. God is saying, you need to come help me liberate my people. And Moses, the first who knows what the first thing he says is, who am I that I should go? Why me? Who am I? Am I so important? I'm not important enough. No. Why me? Why not you? That's his first, why me? And you remember what God's response is? I will go with you. You are not going to be alone in this. I will go with you. And his second excuse is, what if the people ask me who sent me? If I come in like, oh yeah, I've been sent by a God to do this, that, and the other, what if they demand to know more? So God gives him the words to say. And then his next excuse is, well, but what if they don't believe me? What if they don't believe me? What if I come to these people and I tell them that there's this land flowing with milk and honey and they all have to follow me and they all have to leave where they've been living for the past 400 years and they don't believe me? And then finally he says, well, you know, I kind of stutter though. I've never been very articulate. You're expecting me to get up there and make these big speeches in front of Pharaoh and in front of the people, and I've never been very good at that. Perhaps you've picked the wrong person, right? And then he runs out of excuses and he finally says, Lord, please just send somebody else. Please just send somebody else. Why can't somebody else take care of this? And this is a classic human response. When you see a problem that everybody else sees, everybody does nothing because they assume someone else will act first. It's classic. We've all heard about this, like a crime scene happening in the middle of the street with 10, 20 people standing around doing nothing because they're all paralyzed expecting someone else to do something first. Okay, this is exactly where Moses is. So I'm standing there with all these kids that were selling. The only thing of value that they were selling was soda pop. So I bought 15 cans of soda pop because they all wanted to sell me one for like 25 cents a piece. So I bought all these cans of soda pop and I'm sitting there chatting with this woman. I figure she's kind of the mom of at least some of these kids. And she says, no, I'm the family services coordinator. And she explains to me what's happening and what they're trying to raise money for. And in my mind, I remember thinking, I'm too new to this church. I'm too new to this neighborhood to take on the position of outreach chair because I don't know the needs of the population. And I remember thinking, this is an impossible situation. There's no way, even if I want to help, and I do, I can't do this alone. And then I remember that there's a church up the hill that has people and that has money. And I turned to her and I said, you know, this is an impossible. I don't see how you're going to be able to make this work. And she goes, yeah, well, but, you know, but the kids, they wanted to try. And I said, well, you know, it just so happens that I'm the new outreach chair for the church up the hill. And we have plenty of money. I told them that. I said, we have plenty of money and don't know what to do with it. Maybe we can help. And I remember the look in her eyes. It was like she had just won the lottery. You know, oh my God. But she's there with the kids and she was just there with the stuff and she was looking. I could see her thinking, I have to get this person's contact information because if I walk away and forget to call her back, she won't ever be able to find me again. And so I see her going like this on her desk, and she says, I left my purse up in the office. I just need to... She didn't have a pen. She didn't have a piece of paper. So I pulled out my two index cards and my pen, and I wrote her contact information on one index card and my contact information on the other. And 3 weeks later, we outfitted all those kids with school supplies and had so much left over that we were able to leave them with a big stash in case some kids ran out or broke their pencils or whatever. And we had so much left over after that that we actually went to another church in northern Portland that was doing the same thing and needed extra supplies, and I took a whole carload up to them. And so... You know, God responds to Moses and all of his excuses. And he responds to us, to Moses, in the same way he responds to any of us when we are called to act. He says, I will be with you. Remind people that I am a God that has worked throughout history, and this is just one more step in history. Remind them of all of the ways that I worked in the lives of Abraham and Joseph and Esther and Ruth and Christ and Mary and Joseph and Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Susan B. Anthony. Remind them of all of the ways that I have worked through them. These were ordinary people that just decided to say yes and take the first step forward. And then I gave them the words that they needed, and I gave them the tools that they needed, and I gave them the people that they needed, and I was with them through the whole process. I was with them through the whole process. I would love to stand up here and say to you that I made that happen all by myself. I didn't. I went up in front of the church and explained to them what I had seen and asked them if they would help me. And over the next few weeks, we collected money and we collected supplies and people volunteered to be shoppers. We had so many people clipping coupons. Do you remember people standing and, I just saw a hot deal down at the local Rite Aid where you can get 15 packs of pencils for a dollar. Don't waste your money over, get them here and you can get more pencils for those kids. And everybody would run down and get more pencils and get more paper. People were sharing the hot deals to try and stretch those dollars to get all those kids outfitted. And God sent me the people and the resources. I remember people that I had never met before walking up to me and putting cash in my hand. One gentleman, I still don't know his name, he came up and he put $100 into my hand in cash and said, you use this, you spend it on those kids, and you keep doing the good work that you're doing. God sent me the tools and the resources and the people that I needed. So I did not do it alone. I did not do it alone. And that's exactly what happens with Moses. God sends him the deadly plagues. He sends him the words. He sends him Aaron. He sends him the people of Israel that were willing to follow. And once they get into the desert, he sends them the manna and the water from the rock and the quails. Every time there's a problem, God's already there, ready with a solution. He just had to be willing to say yes. And I wonder how many people God called before Moses who said no and walked away. Because everybody was aware of the suffering. Everybody was aware of the suffering. So, on the day we distributed the school supplies, I had just dropped them off, but the woman, the family services coordinator that called, she called me and said, just thought I'd let you know this afternoon at 3:00, we're going to be distributing those supplies if you wanted to come down and join us. And I said, sure, I'll go down, why not? Well, I get there and there's a room where they put tables all the way around the edge of the room and they've sort of lumped the supplies. Pencil boxes are in a pile and the pencils are in a pile and the scissors are in a pile and the paper's in a pile all the way around the room. And all those same kids were still there. And anytime an adult walked in the room with one of those lists, those kids would just be like on them. Three kids, minimum. One to hold their basket, one to hold the list and one to display the supplies. And they'd say, oh, what's the first item on the list, Bobby? And Bobby would say, they need to pick out a pencil pouch. And they, oh, well, a person would hold the basket and the other child would say, oh, well, here's our selection of pencil pouches. What color would your child like? And they'd say, well, my child would like the color green. Okay, we'll pick that up for you and put it in your basket that this other child is holding. And they shepherded through every adult. They were so excited to be part of this. They were so invested in the success of the community. To watch the children, even 4 years old, carefully reading the next item on the list was astounding to see. And while I was sitting there, the other adult and I, we didn't do anything. We just sat there and the kids ran the whole thing. We just watched it unfold. And at one point, a woman came in, and I got to admit, my first instinct was that she was kind of scary. She was really tall. She had dyed her hair jet black. You could tell it was dyed jet black, and she was wearing this. She had heavy eye makeup on, and she was wearing a t-shirt that had like a skull with a snake coming out of it, you know, and some knives or something, and combat boots and holes in her jeans. And she comes stomping in. She did not look too happy. She looked like she was a little out of her element, and we didn't know what she would do or say. And she had with her a teenage son that was dressed similarly. And so those little kids, though, rushed up to them just like they'd done with every other adult. Hello, let us help you hold your list. Let me hold your basket. And they started walking this teenage boy around. And as they got started, he said, can I pick out supplies for my little sister, too? She's not here right now. She's starting kindergarten. And that little boy, every time they asked him what he wanted, he would say, my sister's favorite color is pink. Can I have the pink one, please? Can I have the pink one, please? Are there any more? She likes pink. And he picked out his sister's favorite color in every single thing. And so while this is happening, I'm talking to the mother, right? She comes over to say hello. And I introduced herself and said I was from the church. And she goes, oh, she says, you know, I have to tell you, I was sitting at work today and I was stressing at my desk. I was worried because my electric bills come due and my fridge is almost empty. And I barely have enough money to cover both. And then it hit me all of a sudden. It hit me just like a ton of bricks dropping right on my head and shoulders. The school starts next week, and I haven't bought all those supplies. There's a list waiting for me at home, sitting at her coffee table, staring at her no matter which room she's in, right? This list, and she suddenly realized she had to choose. Do I feed my children? Do I educate my children? Or do I keep them warm? I cannot have all three. And it was a horrible situation to be in, right? All the responsibility, zero control. And she popped, as anybody would. She said she started to tremble at her desk. She started to shake, and she started to try not to cry so she wouldn't make a scene, but she was so frightened and so overwhelmed at this horrible choice that when, by the time she got home, she was a wreck, and she was weary. She was weary because she couldn't give up the responsibility. And she got to her door, and she saw a little sign on her door that said, free school supplies today in such and such a room provided by Hillsdale Community Church, United Church of Christ. And she said, she started to weep. And she started to cry right there in front of me. Her makeup was running all down her face. She cried, and she said, when I saw that sign, I knew that God was going to take care of us and we were going to be okay. I knew that God was going to take care of us and we were going to be okay. And that's all we're called to do, is to let people know that God's going to take care of them and they're going to be okay. And we can do that because God is with us. God will give us the tools, the resources, the words, and the people that we need to be able to let people know that God is with them and it's all going to be okay. Can I get an amen to that? Amen.